Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, as truthful as resources permit. My name is Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
Insert funny anecdote about me being a Remainer here. My name's Jazza and we come to you semi-regularly to talk about politics, social issues and current events. Today we are once again with guests and it's twins!
No,
but like there's two of you and you could be fraternal.
We come as a pair.
We are Adder and Jack from Totally Unprepared Politics.
Thank you very much for having us. Just as you are, Jimmy Jazza John.
Thank you very much for having us. For being here. Oh God, this is going to be four men talking. Very difficult to distinguish between voices. So bear with us, everybody.
Oh yeah, we didn't do what they did on our show.
For the purposes of the recording, I am Adder.
And I am Jack.
And I am Jazza.
And I'm Jimmy.
By the way, the voice I just did there, I don't really actually sound like that.
That might be a problem.
What are we going to talk about this week, Jimmy?
This week we're going to start off with the resignation of Kim DeRock, I suppose is that how you say his surname?
Oh God no, I've heard lots of different pronunciations.
I thought it was DeRoche, but that's probably someone pretending to be European.
Isn't it DeRoche? I thought DeRoche.
Oh, I like that.
Because he's really posh? Because he's a man called Kim.
Yes. anyway,
I know one of them.
He's not throwing shade at other people called Kim, of course. Yeah.
Yes, obviously. And he resigned from his role as ambassador to the US after various memos that he wrote were leaked, making disparaging remarks around Donald Trump. And he decided he couldn't go on as a diplomat.
But the reason that he said that he couldn't go on was because he didn't seem to get the support of Boris Johnson in one of his television appearances.
To be fair, if you're the ambassador to the US and the UK leader doesn't like you and the US leader doesn't like you, it's not going to be great for diplomacy, is it?
That is very true, but also it is the leader of a foreign nation basically saying who we can have in our diplomatic posts.
Very true.
Oh, what an interesting conversation we have set up there. We've also got something gay that we're going to talk about, because, you know, why not? Northern Ireland is going to become the final part of the British Isles to pass same-sex marriage. It was added to a part of a piece of legislation around governing the Northern Ireland Assembly, which hasn't been able to meet because of differences between the two major parties, Sinn Féin and the Democratic Unionists. And so Westminster is, for want of a better word, taking back control and has decided that it's going to end up passing legislation in support of equal marriage and of the ability to get an abortion, which brings Northern Ireland back into step with both the Republic and the Kingdom.
Northern Ireland was the first place to give people the right to have civil partnerships in the British Isles.
They're all right with a little bit of equality, but not too much.
It's interesting, isn't it, though? They were the first ones to jump on that, but now they're the last ones to actually fully legalise same-sex marriage.
But we'll talk about kind of like the Northern Irish, kind of like what's happening over there, but also the balkanisation of that part of the UK, specifically along the Sinn Féin DUP lines. And then finally...
finally. Do you guys want to introduce Tommy Robinson, since you made the suggestion?
What's his name? Yaxley Stephen.
Stephen Yaxley Lennon.
That's the one.
Yaxley Stephen Lennon.
So Stephen Yaxley Lennon has actually been sentenced for what he did outside the courthouse, where he
9 months.
Got the video of... I can't fully remember what he did, you know. He got a video of...
Contempt of court.
Yeah,
he videoed the defendants as they were entering or leaving the courts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's finally actually been sentenced for that, and he's gone around asking Trump for wants refugee status or wants to seek asylum there.
Was the problem that he revealed their identity? Was that?
I only read a summary of the judge's remarks, but it seems to have been he was undermining the court process by... I mean, I don't think that the identity of the defendants was a secret per se, but he was, by identifying them and sort of telling people they should be harassing them, was interfering with the court process and putting pressure on it, and therefore carrying the risk that the trial would be unfair, and therefore the defendants' lawyers would be able to say this trial was unfair and collapsing the entire trial that way. Mm-hmm. So that was the problem, I think.
Yeah.
Sounds like a problem.
Yeah. Excellent. We're now going to play some music. Beg you for a little bit of your cash. Thank you so much. And then come back to you afterwards. Good?
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, hold on.
What happens now?
Oh, hold on. No, I haven't finished yet.
We're
stop it.
Behind the curtain.
Oh no, I can't find the stop button. Hello, it's Jazza here again, just to remind you that we at The Right Dishonourable are a completely listener-supported podcast. We'd like to think that it's because we won't partake in capitalism and make sure that we are completely at the behest of you and only you, the listener, but actually it's because we're just not very good at finding sponsors. We therefore rely on patrons, on our Patreon and donations from listeners there, to be able to keep the podcast going with like hosting fees and the buying of new equipment and all that kind of stuff. Thank you very much to Ollie, Agatha, Gemma, Matt, Dominique and John for continuing to support us. It really does mean a lot and make a huge difference. If you would like to support us on Patreon, just search for Right Dishonourable and Patreon. Oh, amazing what the internet can do these days. Right, let's get on with this really fun show.
Jazza, do you think Sir Kim should have resigned?
It is really hard. Because he clearly was not going to be able to do his job. He wasn't going to have a job at the end of this year anyway.
February, I think it was.
Yeah, he was going to step down anyway. His term had come to an end, and people get rotated out of those positions. Mm. Normally. But I think he should have stayed on, but it should have been recognised that he wasn't able to actually do the job of ambassador to the United Kingdom properly. Well, yeah, just symbolically. I think that to have a foreign leader, even if it is meant to be like our closest ally, basically be the cause of us not being able to have the person that we want represent us in a country. Imagine if that were China, for example. I think that this really is kind of like an unprecedented thing that has happened. And the fact that Boris Johnson also has been cited as a reason, his lack of support for Sir Kim, the man. Sir Kim. The fact that he hasn't... didn't back him to the hilt proper, like in a way that made him feel like he could stay on.
So which TV show was it where he didn't back
I believe him? It was the ITV debate.
It was more than one. I think there were six different occasions in which he could have. Didn't say anything. Maybe six occasions within the same show, but certainly I read six different occasions he could have.
I do agree. It was definitely in the ITV ITV debate.
I agree with what you're saying from the angle of Trump, but it seemed to me more that the reason he stepped down at this point was because of what you said about Boris not backing him. That was more his reasoning.
But it's like now he steps down, he might just be forgotten and we won't remember this scandal in a few weeks. Whereas if he had stayed on, he could have at least helped everyone appreciate the fact that he was trying to be forced out of office solely because President Trump was trying to dictate who can be in.
But then his job as a civil servant is to make the movements of politicians smoother. And if he is going to be kind of like if he's a block to our own Prime Minister and like something that's going to make their job more awkward, then it makes... civil servants do that. They fall on their swords because their jobs aren't tenable anymore. I would have been really nice for there to be a response from Boris that was along the lines of Jeremy Hunt, who is the actual Foreign Secretary at the moment and is not terrible at his job in the way that Boris Johnson was.
So what was Jeremy Hunt's...
He was like, I support Sir Kim staying in the role, staying as
Theresa May
job.
Said something similar.
Yeah, she? Right. Mm. Yeah, and we should, as a country, be able to decide who our ambassadors are. Mm-hmm. It's quite scary that this has clearly been kind of like a targeted and coordinated attack because of like the way that it was leaked and who it was leaked by.
So who was it leaked by?
I can't remember her name.
It's Isabel Oakeshott.
Isabel Oakeshott. who is? I can't remember her name. I was asking for help there, Jim, called out. She is well known to be kind of like in cahoots with Aaron Banks.
She ghostwrote the Bad Boys of Brexit.
Mm. Yeah, his biography.
Well, biography of the Brexit campaign. Right. As he saw it.
Yeah.
So Aaron Banks was the funder of Nigel Farage and still is.
And Leave.eu, wasn't he?
Yeah, Leave.eu.
Currently under investigation by the
Well, by someone, probably.
By the EU at the moment, for the donations to Nigel Farage.
Mm-hmm. Is it them or is it the Electoral Commission who's...
I think it was the EU. I think we talked about EU. This, but I'll have to check it out. Okay. Don't take what I say.
There was also frustration after the ambassador stepped down, where there were a lot of interviews with Nigel Farage, and I didn't see his qualification for actually being interviewed across like every single piece of media, and it just kind of like hammered home the fact that he is just rolled out and is given a disproportionate platform to other people who may actually have... kind of like more insight and stuff to say, but he suggested, and a lot of people who are in that kind of crew have suggested, that we should no longer have civil servant appointments to ambassadorships, and that it should be political appointments in a similar way to how the United States do it. What do you boys think of
it's
that
kind of interesting.
As a possible?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I'm not going to agree.
No, I don't think we'll...
It puts too much power, I guess, in the hands of the... Like, I don't know, it's kind of the opposite of what you're scared of, which is Trump being able to control sort of who we have in charge of our foreign relations. Yeah. It puts that now in the hands of our politics. I don't really want it in the hands of either of them.
It's kind of like the... So
okay, there's a lot to say about the civil service, no doubt.
So
but
when,
like, in my head, there are problems there, but they're quite benign.
So when we talk about political appointments, we don't necessarily mean politicians.
The politicians would appoint them, right? Is what you
yes,
mean.
Right. Yeah. But the politicians appoint them now, like the Prime Minister will choose, because they come from the civil service. Okay. Whereas a political appointment would be somebody who is, in the US, an ambassadorship is kind of similar to giving somebody a knighthood or a lordship. As it like, thank you for giving me a shit ton of money in my campaign. And you see all of the people that Trump has given ambassadorships.
Definitely don't think we should go down that road.
Yeah, that's
100%.
Yeah. And it's a very self-serving thing for somebody like Nigel Farage to do. This isn't the first time that he suggested that he should be the UK ambassador to the United States, to which everybody guffaws. Although Boris Johnson in charge, which may happen.
Isn't Nigel the British politician that's closest?
He loves
he's
to
not
call
yours.
His friends.
Well, it's just a name.
Like, he loves calling by their first names. Yeah. Like, they're your friends.
Well, no, I don't like any of these people, really. They're all trying to screw my life. So isn't it true that Nigel is, Mr. Farage, is the British politician that spent most time with Trump? The closest to Trump,
it seems. Was he the first one to meet him?
He was the first one to meet him.
Yeah, he was.
So that's probably true.
I'm not even sure. I don't think that qualifies.
It would be Theresa May who probably spent the most time face to face with Trump.
Okay, they have meetings.
Maybe I don't think Nigel Farage has ever held Trump's hand, which Theresa May
has. Well, Theresa May did that early on as well.
They held shoulders at the Gold Elevator. Yeah.
First to hold hands.
Plus, I'm assuming usually in the British system anyway, you appoint somebody to be ambassador after they've already worked their way through various levels.
Yeah, they're people who would have nowadays they would have started on like the fast stream or something, worked in various departments, and then worked their way up the Foreign Office. They're Foreign Office officials.
Nigel Farage basically hasn't had a real job for 20 years, so...
I think that's unfair to other MEPs. I think that's unfair to other MEPs who actually
do
their job.
He does not.
That is true.
Look at the Brexit Party now, all not turning up occasionally.
You know, but when they do, they turn their backs. They've got lovely backs of their heads, beautiful necks.
Do you not think it's weird that surely it kind of seemed obvious once Trump had called out the ambassador that he wasn't really going to be able to continue in his role anyway? So why did Boris not just come out and say this is a bad thing, but also clearly it seems like it's going to have to happen anyway, when instead of just saying nothing?
Well, because Boris is going to be Prime Minister, none of the others are. So it actually matters what he says in when it comes to Trump, because they're actually...
But also Jeremy Hunt is the current Foreign Secretary.
Yeah, so he should be.
And so that also matters. Like,
does,
like so Kim
does,
is technically... is
he answers to Jeremy Hunt.
Yeah, he answers to Jeremy Hunt.
Doesn't
he?
So both of their... Like, both of those are legitimate stances to take. We don't know if Jeremy Hunt is going to continue to be the Foreign Secretary after...
What do you think about
we
that?
Assume
Boris... Do you think they'll make up after this, Boris and Hunt?
I think...
Whoever wins...
Everyone else will
make
one
in under the wing.
I think it's unlikely. After, like, it's gotten... pretty personal, a lot of the stuff that Jeremy Hunt has said in a very Jeremy Hunt way, but I wouldn't give him a job.
Well, what are some of the personal sides?
calling out his character, like he has played that card.
That
a lot of people were suggesting that.
Well, Johnson does have a bad character. So
yeah, but I don't think that he wants to hear that from his friends.
But doesn't Boris Johnson also understand the game a little bit and know that those things that you say when you're trying to win an election might
mean
understands
so the game.
Much.
I think more. I think
after.
Yeah, yeah, but he might more than anybody. Like, yeah. Him more than anyone understands like the games that you play when you're trying to get something over the line and when it comes to.
Yes, I doubt he sees it as that personal, despite how personal we see it. I'm sure he sees it more as just the like a dangerous
the game.
Profession. Yeah, it's the game.
Maybe, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he might be all right.
Boris. What do you think about this premise of Trump basically being the catalyst that has seen one of our officials abroad go? Are you as worried as I am? Because I think that
no,
it's really
No, because as I stated at the beginning, I don't think that's the main reason. Like, obviously that is a big problem, but I think the undermining from our own side then means it's, like, impossible to stay on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the scary
like, we've
thing
made
the
it
fact,
impossible for him, really.
The scary thing is the fact that Trump didn't seem to actually say he should go, but just got very angry at him, and because of that, he's now gone. So he doesn't even need to directly say.
He did attack his competence, though. He said, "You know, we really don't like this guy."
But that's not saying you should get rid
but
of him.
But then
that's
we all remember when all the American diplomatic cables were leaked about what they've been saying about everyone around the world, and they just prosecuted everyone involved and hunted them. They're not really on the same, you know. Yeah, sorry. Just have to have a little dig there.
On kind of,
I mean,
like,
I don't find it that scary. I mean, the fact if you know someone else has already said it, but if you can't do a job anymore because, in this case, the president of the United States doesn't like you, assuming that's a valid thing for a diplomat, which I guess it is, then it's kind of irrelevant what Boris did or didn't say. And in some ways, this has been this has been picked up as a story by people who don't like Boris Johnson in order to attack him with.
The story is more about the leak, right? Like it is
now because Boris Johnson.
Yeah,
says the
and that's
really
kind of like one
problem.
Of the scary things because we do need our civil service and our ambassadors to be able to have those frank conversations and to be able to document frankly their interpretations of like local of the countries where they are based, and I think that this. Damages that to a certain extent. There was some talk this morning on the Today program from a couple of ex-diplomats who were talking about the fact that in China they don't do electronic communications anymore for this very reason. Mm-hmm. Everything is written down.
You mean physically written down?
Physically written down with like pen and paper.
Snail mail.
Because also we need these documentations for posterity as well. So that we are able to kind of like look back in history. Like, I think that's a part of it that could be damaged by this as well. Because part of me was also like, maybe he should just kind of use WhatsApp or like to say it over the phone.
Encryption.
I mean, and maybe there should be some kind of encryption on government cables.
Mm-hmm. I would assume there is.
I mean, you can't, if somebody legitimately gets hold of a communication, you can't stop them from leaking.
Yeah, and we still don't know who ended up leaking it, right? We still don't
know. Should
Isabel
Oakeshott have published this, do you think?
Yeah, I think that you have to, if you're a journalist who gets that kind of information, I think it's an obligation to.
But it wasn't really much of a story,
published
to be honest.
It, or she leaked it?
No, she published
it.
It was leaked to
her.
Oh, okay.
And then she, yeah, no, she's not a spy.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as we know.
True say.
Like
true
all
say.
Spies. Like all people.
I think that, I mean, you're the journalist. You're the proper journalist.
I mean, I would publish it, but I'm,
you
know,
a
journalist.
You also love to see the world burn.
But I, you know, it is, obviously it has turned into a story, but at the same time, you know, intelligent ambassador thinks that Donald Trump is a moron is not really a story in some sense, right?
And so it was a deliberate attempt to get him out of his job. And I think that's kind of like the real story and the way
it's
thinking about
been,
it.
It's been kind of, obscured, though, in the whole resignation row in the end. But yeah, that probably should be our focus.
That's maybe go back to what you were saying at the beginning, that if actually he hadn't resigned and stayed on, you might have highlighted some of these issues more, whereas now he's resigned, there's the whole row about that, and then it'll be forgotten because he won't be there to make any noise.
This is now a criminal investigation as well. They're thinking of invoking the Official Secrets Act, which says that you can't leak state secrets. You didn't really need that description. You could have guessed that.
This is the new Tory beef, right? You've got Michael Fallon saying that we should be doing that, and Boris Johnson saying that no, it's fine to be leaking.
Well, because Boris Johnson is a journalist. Like, that's his background.
Well, there's a distinction here. So, right, a lot of the time we do say on the show that we should be hailing up the whistleblowers and leakers for how great they are. But, like, so, okay, if there's some kind of, you know, if the military are killing civilians and shit like that, then, yeah, it's very, you know, a good thing to be leaking that. But if it's something like the ambassador thinks Trump's a prick,
yeah,
then there's no... I'm not saying that leaking that is something that
should be celebrated. Yeah, the only outcome
and
of that is...
And if you are leaking small stuff
job.
Like
yeah.
that,
it's
then
national security,
we're going to erode the trust in the security and safety of the
but
communications.
But it is long-term
people,
a national security issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it means it's potentially harder for us to work together with... quote unquote, our closest ally.
Well, it might be better now because we'll have an ambassador who's going to be better.
But also, if
when Nigel gets in,
exactly,
your mate.
Yeah.
It can also be an issue from our response to this, because if we don't deal with this properly, then people can see it as like there's a light touch around leaking these kind of things. And it can become, you know, people are more likely to leak these bits and bobs if they think that nothing's going to come of it.
Yeah, I think there is press freedom, right? Like you're saying, Jimmy, that actually, as a journalist, a cynical journalist, it seems like you should be allowed to just leak these kind of, or publish these leaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't blame the journalist for publishing it.
Yeah.
And then about the original leaker.
Okay, so you think that people shouldn't be leaking these things? Even?
Yeah, not.
I mean, no, but they're saying that it should be a criminal offence for the journalist to publish it.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think about that, as the journalist in the room?
I
make you speak for the 52% enough. I'll make you speak for the other hated section of our society.
I mean, journalists will always be opposed to any restrictions, basically. Mm-hmm.
No, but I think I know you're going to speak in generalisations, and I want you to answer what you think of it.
Mm-hmm. I would have published it. So, as a general rule, I don't think that I don't think there should be a blanket like prescription against publishing leaks, leaked information. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless it's maybe it's some of the operational stuff around, you know, security that actually legitimately put somebody's life in danger.
Like, for example, when the position of Prince Harry when he was serving in Afghanistan was leaked. Like, that's like another asshole thing of, like, why have you even leaked that?
Right? See, I think the difficulty is that generally big newspapers...
Did that person get jailed or, like...
No, they didn't, I don't think. It was a foreign journalist.
Okay, but big newspapers generally will actually have a policy, like, that they apply and they say, is it worth us publishing this? The trouble really is more, like... people like Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and, you know, even potentially sort of like bloggers who actually don't have an... they're not part of an institution. They will just do what they want to do. And I don't really know how the law accounts for those people, because you can generally trust... newspapers will probably keep in line because they're worried about, reputation, future legislation that constrains their job in other ways. So it's... I don't really know how you do it.
And there's a massive interest there for the small blogger or news agency to put these kind of things out for the masses.
Because then there's exclusivity, right? And that we've seen that kind of happen a lot with, I mean, more salacious celebrity stories, like certain...
even the Christchurch shooting, that was taken up by some independent team because they wanted to be the ones who could put it out there.
On the actual video.
Yeah, whilst the larger newspapers couldn't really... caught more in the red tape of it for reputation and legislation and things.
Do you worry about the self-censorship of journalists going forward? This will be the last thing before we go into the next topic. Do you worry about the self-censorship of journalists going forward when leaking these kinds of things? Or publishing these kinds of things?
If there's an obvious public interest defence in it, I think, I mean, notwithstanding, I don't think that actually acts as a legal defence, but I think politically that does act as a defence. If, like, as you say, if civilians are being murdered in underhand circumstances, I think it's unlikely that an Attorney General would choose to prosecute a journalist for leaking that sort of information.
Well, that's why Julian's on his way to America now, then, isn't it?
That's a totally different set of laws.
Yeah, that is.
That's
a
pretty different situation.
So the gays in Northern Ireland, and it is only
the
gays.
Seamless transition.
Thank you. Thanks for calling it out as well, Jimmy. It means a lot.
He's great at calling you out.
What a dick.
Call out culture is important to me.
Who will keep you in check otherwise, Jazza?
So Northern Ireland was the final place in the United Kingdom to not have same-sex marriage or abortions, and also in the Republic on the island of Ireland as well. This is mainly because of an impasse for the Northern Irish Assembly, where Sinn Féin and the Democratic Unionists, who have a power-sharing agreement as part of the Good Friday Agreement, have failed to be able to come to any kind of benchmarks to come and govern one another. And the region has kind of really had a tough time trying to govern itself, and it hasn't passed any legislation. There's also the fact that the DUP as a party are also against the same-sex marriage as a a concept. So they, I think when they had the vote in it, in Parliament, obviously Sinn Féin don't take their seats. Mm-hmm. The majority of the Democratic Unionists, I think only one member of Parliament for the DUP actually voted in favour of bringing same-sex marriage to Northern Ireland.
How many members do they have?
I believe it's 10.
Yeah, something that's a small amount.
It's something that just pushes the Conservative majority mm-hmm. into a majority.
I think the DUP, because in Northern Ireland, they did pass some legislation that would have brought in same-sex marriage years mm-hmm. ago, but the DUP vetoed it because they have the power to do that as part of their constitution.
Yeah, it was won by one vote, I think. It was 53 to 52 or something. And then the DUP vetoed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you guys think of Westminster taking back control of stuff that's happening in Northern Ireland? Because the last time that was the default, it didn't go very well. And to be fair, it isn't going very well in Northern Ireland at the moment either.
This thing, normally I would certainly say no. Yeah, obviously it seems like a bad idea. But it literally, like you say, if they don't have their own assembly, they haven't had one for a while now, mm-hmm. and they're not actually kind of doing anything themselves, then probably someone should be helping them, right? I understand that there's mm-hmm. devolved powers that you don't want to take away, but like, take Sinn Féin's response was actually that despite the fact that they don't like the Westminster imposing on their devolved powers, they actually
they agree with these decisions, right?
On this instance, they're okay with it.
But there is the thing that this was passed by the rest of the United Kingdom voting for legislation in Northern mm-hmm. Ireland. Mm-hmm. Because Sinn Féin do not take their seats in Parliament, if this were just on Northern Irish votes, this wouldn't have passed.
It was only the 10 DUP.
And also, there is a slight majority in polling for this year when it comes to opinions of same-sex marriage in Northern Ireland, but it's only at 55% in favour.
Okay.
Which is
more than enough for Brexit.
Yeah. but it's not kind of like a steadfast
You can't point
majority,
out and say most people clearly want this.
Mm-hmm. But in your intro to it, most people do want like, it. Kind of sounded kind of like you're suggesting they would have done it if there hadn't been this impasse in the Parliament.
There are a couple of things that stop Sinn Féin and the DUP actually working together at the moment. One of them is the Irish language legislation that Sinn Féin insist on, which DUP don't support. And the other one is, and then it's abortion and same-sex marriage as well. Mm. So Westminster have decided to kind of like keep out of
The language issue. So what is the language issue?
The language issue is kind of like having the Irish language taught in state schools in Northern Ireland.
As they do in the Republic of Ireland already.
Yes, and having like dual language signage and all of those kinds of things, similar to what they have in Wales. Mm. And that's because of the whole like Irish identity and UK identity clashing there. But it's now become, like, same-sex marriage has less become kind of like a principled thing and has more become a part of the clear-cut identities of Northern Ireland, of kind of like the Catholic and the Protestant communities. Mm. If you are DUP, regardless as to your age, you are more likely to be against same-sex marriage and abortions, whereas if you are aligned with the Catholic community and you vote Sinn Féin, then you're more likely to be in favour of them, because now that Ireland ended up being more progressive in those areas, they can now kind of like identify that. Mm. And it's interesting how people's ideologies have kind of been crafted by...
It's amazing the disparity between the Republic of Ireland voting for these things in referendum and Northern Ireland having them imposed on them by a foreign power, basically.
Well, not a foreign power.
We're a different country.
No, please be careful. We're a
different country.
We will get letters.
All right, fair enough. Lawyers can look over that later.
Yeah.
The Northern Irish are British. I mean, that's sort of the whole point, really.
Yeah. So. But at the same time, they do have a separate assembly to some degree, like you say, so there is some devolved.
I mean, so do Wales and. London Assembly. Mm-hmm. They're even
proposing.
Is there
a London Assembly?
Yes.
You should have seen Jazz's face then, listeners.
Well, what do
you
they do?
You should have seen it.
In fairness, they don't really do anything.
Yeah, like, they hold the mayor to account.
Oh, okay. Jazz is probably a member.
Citizens assembly. It's like a citizens assembly.
No, we vote for them.
Yeah, so they ask...
You vote for the people that hold him to account.
Yeah.
Can't you just hold him to account somehow?
By voting him in.
It is an important... They stand in the lovely Armadillo building. And it's important we fill it with someone.
Wait, did you say the lovely armadillo building?
Yeah,
or the
lovely.
Lovely?
The lovely, lovely. Okay. It's a very nice structure. One of the phenomena of this was, so for non-conservative DUP members, everybody voted in favour of bringing same-sex marriage and abortion to the to Northern Ireland.
This was in the Westminster.
In the Westminster vote. Yeah, yeah. For the Conservatives, there were 105 votes. Wait, no. There were 73 votes from the Conservative and the Democratic Unionist grouping for 105 Conservative votes who voted in favour of same-sex marriage. So that's still a pretty tight...
70 against.
Yeah, 70 to 100-ish. And funnily enough, when you look at the people who ended up voting against same-sex marriage in Northern Ireland, they line up quite nicely with those who are really in favour of a no-deal Brexit. What do you think it is about those two cultural phenomena, Jimmy, that means that they are so aligned and intertwined?
Oh, you know.
As a spokesperson for the 52%.
I don't think it's any secret that people in favour of Brexit tend to be conservative, and conservatives tend to be less in favour of gay marriage and abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Shocker.
To return that serve.
I don't think any of that excused it or explained it really.
No,
I mean, I'm not looking to excuse it. I mean, it's, you know, there are various arguments that you can make, and I probably will try and make that you actually there's something that is a bit fishy about deciding to effectively impose same-sex marriage and, you know, loose restrictions on abortion on Northern Ireland from Westminster, given that officially those
it's
are
the same country, isn't it?
It is, but...
No, we're a union of four nations.
Oh, right, so they're different countries now. Yeah, I didn't when it say suits that. Your argument.
I mean, I'm not going to stick up for Jazz's confused, you know, wording on this, but...
It's a very specific wording. Very
if you choose to devolve something to Northern Ireland or Wales or, you know, Scotland...
I do agree.
In principle, you shouldn't actually legislate on that. I mean, on the other hand, I don't really see why we have different rules for abortion across...
Totally.
I think that, in principle, I think that is something that should be legislated from Westminster, but the fact is, it isn't.
And the same with marriage, I would say. I think that those things that fall into kind of like broad civil rights do need to be something that is centralised across the whole.
I think But if you have said, look, this is on you in, you know, this particular region, you can make the rules.
Do you think it's okay in context of the fact that they have no parliament operating?
Well, they have an assembly, but they don't have a government.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't enact it if they decided to do that, right? They
don't. So some of the assemblies just kind of like turn up and hang out. Because Sinn Féin and the DUP are only two of the parties that refuse to actually do anything.
We seem to have found a lot of different political groups that actually don't do a lot. They've got some fancy name for themselves, but in the end of the day, they just sit around and don't do much. You've got the London Assembly, you've got...
I mean, the European Parliament.
Yeah, exactly. You said that one already.
Yeah.
Northern Irish Assembly apparently isn't up to anything.
They will have the right once Stormont ends up, hopefully eventually, sitting again, they will have the option of revoking these laws that have been imposed by Westminster. What do you think, with our deep and vast knowledge of Northern Ireland politics, what do you think of the likelihood of that happening?
I think I'd like to see them have a referendum and then decide.
Oh no, let's stop putting abortion rights and like gay marriage to referenda.
Well, that's something what I would support more than the Brexit thing. The Brexit thing is a complicated, you know, whereas those are just like a kind of
those are just human rights.
Moral.
Yeah, exactly. So, do you think people should have these rights?
Well, no, I'm not saying they're not as important. They're more important, if anything, but they're kind of the issues that don't need a load of like.
They seem
in-depth
more
knowledge
to
base your opinion on, like, you just need to know the facts, which is just we're all humans, isn't it? So, like, come on, people.
If only you were the First Minister.
I mean, essentially, the abortion and gay marriage thing is, it's a subjective judgment on, you know, what you think the rules should be around those things. But actually, you know, the Brexit vote was basically, do you want to be governed from Brussels or not?
Mm-hmm. Which you can frame it like that, but there's many ways to frame it.
Yeah, and I don't think that's how it's framed.
Many different.
Yeah, but
there's just many ways of being able to do it for the like abortion and like same-sex marriage debates as well. Like, you can have a religious tint, or you can have kind of like a you can believe in
biology. People talk about biology with their abortion and like.
I mean, like there's the heartbeat bill in America.
There's a lot of ways to frame that as well.
So, do we think that they'll reclaim it?
How easy, if they do form a government, how easy is it for them to repeal these?
It would have to be passed as like a normal piece
like
of
normal
legislation.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. So they can repeal
it's
it.
Not like the 2/3 majority that they sometimes have to have.
Okay. So
probably, yes, it will get repealed then, depending on the government that is formed when...
Once something is enacted in law, its effort to undo that, which I assume is the thinking of Stella Creasy when she actually proposed this.
So we're hoping for apathy and that they'll just be like, we'll deal with other things and not worry about it.
Apathy or just being busy or, you know...
Deal with the impending wall.
They've got a lot to talk about other than same-sex marriage and abortion.
There's the phenomenon of same-sex marriage opinion polling, at least becoming much more in favour once the legislation has actually been passed. For example, when it got passed in England and Wales, I think if it those in favour were about 55-60%. That area. And now it's like upwards of 75-80%. It seems like as soon as people realise that mass flooding doesn't happen as soon as you let the gays hold hands in public, that you're going to
As gay rights have become stronger, flooding around the world has increased.
He's not wrong.
QED.
Definite causation.
Equally though, is the phenomenon of people becoming more liberal once gay marriage is allowed actually because gay marriage has been allowed, or is it just people are becoming more liberal in general?
It's possibly across that a huge as well. Range. But also a 20 point jump in 5 years is also pretty massive.
That's pretty
anyway.
High.
Compare it to places that haven't allowed it but have the same sort of progression.
And there's other examples of things where they brought in legislation that's changed people's opinion on it. Like take seatbelts. People were very against bringing in seatbelts, but now pretty much everyone would just automatically put one on because we just changed the legislation, made people have to have them, and like you say, they eventually realised the safety benefits and there wasn't that much of an imposition. So I think quite a lot of the time in psychological studies you see that legislation changes. Like, for example, they changed the legislation on whether you could have chip pans, and people were very angry about that, and then they realised that actually they caused loads of fires that now
weren't
happening.
You can't have chip pans.
You can't have a chip pan in your house.
Yeah.
You can't?
I don't think so, can you?
How do they police that one then?
I doubt
it's just a ban on the sale of chip pans. I don't know.
I'm not sure if it then got spread out to the wider legislation. In the study, the legislation was being imposed in certain regions, and they were testing that against other areas where they were just doing advertising or doing nothing to make people aware of chip pan fires, and they found that people came on side more if you just legislated that they couldn't have them, basically.
Yeah. Christ. Yeah. Well, this is a serious development, this chip pad thing.
Are you actually breaking the logic?
He's there I need to go
sweet
home.
Potato
to
fries. Home. Jimmy's gone. I think I've left the chip pad. So why should we care about Tommy Robinson being in contempt of court? I'm bored of him.
Yeah, I'm bored of him.
Well, you guys suggested this, Tom.
No, that's actually my fault.
That was nothing to
do. I really wanted to talk about it just because the guy annoys me so much, and I kind of just was happy that he'd got sentenced. But then now I'm not happy because he's turning it into just more of his
He's a
spin.
Martyr.
Exactly, he is a martyr.
As a freedom of speech. I was at a conference this week around media freedom, and there was this trolley Canadian guy called Ezra Levant who kept on writing Free Tommy Robinson and everything. And I'm like, yeah, but he was in contempt of court.
Yeah.
He broke a law.
The supporters seem to forget that part, don't they?
Totally.
Yeah.
He's not a political prisoner, is he, really? He's literally just someone who broke a law.
No, but is it possible to interpret it as that at all?
Well,
I mean, the contempt of court rules are, you know, notwithstanding, they were explained to him in quite some detail because he got in trouble in Canterbury Court for a similar sort of thing. But
so it was expected.
Most people do not understand contempt of court laws, and some of them, because it is something you study as a journalist, some of them are quite counterintuitive, I think, particularly in the age of social media where people just think that they can write anything without any repercussions.
How good is ignorance as a defence, though? Could you
clearly it wasn't very good.
Ignorance is actually an excellent defence.
Okay, do you think that he was not ignorant to it?
Legally speaking, Lord Bingham, who was a top judge in Britain, he's dead now, but he said ignorance will actually mitigate a sentence massively for you most of the time. But it's important that people don't know that because they will just say they're ignorant of things.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess then you have to go to this weird argument of trying to prove that they did know about it even though they're claiming not to.
Well, you would do as the prosecution. But yeah, I mean, contempt of court rules, I think particularly in the case of these sort of sex gang trials, because you have to protect the identity of the victims, and they are sort of semi-secret trials, basically. And given there's a widespread perception that the police and councils and the government and the media really dropped the ball on a lot of these cases, I think that has actually reinforce the impression that the establishment aren't really cracking down on this properly. So I think there are some legitimate causes for why people are turning cases like Tommy Robinson's into, you know, martyrdom and all the rest
how
of it.
How do you deal with that problem? Because that was well outlined.
I think it's difficult because I think it's right that we protect the identities of victims in these things. And I think it's sort of just the cost of doing business on
things. Do we have to be better explaining, though, why we're going about that?
Most people do not care about process questions. So
yeah, I'm sure.
You know, it's very difficult.
Do we just live with the fact then that the public are going to feel like the government are hiding?
You can try educating people more at school and stuff like that, and that probably would have an impact long term. But I think it's sort of an impossible position, really.
Tough one.
So are you guys happy that he's gone to prison?
I don't really have the hatred of Tommy Robinson that people generally...
I'm just a little bit fed up with him.
He's obviously an idiot, and he's obviously a bit... Well, I mean...
I wouldn't call him an idiot.
He's not stupid, but he does stupid things. Yes. And he's deliberately provocative. And I'm sure he knew that he was going to get in trouble for this thing at Leeds.
I get very frustrated by him kind of being the hijacker of kind of like freedom of speech. Because then I think that a lot of... Especially... younger people that I sometimes speak to then have because freedom of speech has kind of been hijacked by his section of politics, freedom of speech is then seen as kind of like something negative that we shouldn't have. And I think that when that applies to kind of like what we were talking about with the ambassador's case, sometimes you can have encroachments on potential encroachments on freedom of speech, like suggesting that journalists shouldn't be able to publish information that they have, and people are like people are okay with that, but actually it's a really important part of how our democracies end up working. There's a similar thing happening in Australia at the moment where there were some government leaks and the journalists are having all of their files and laptops seized.
Wait, is that not the story of the guy calling someone else a twat? I feel like it was one of the politicians called another one a twat and that got released in
got leaked and now they're going, oh, you can't like say that anymore. But I do worry about kind of like this freedom of speech being seen as something that is right wing, whereas actually it's something that it is always going to be the cantankerous like envelope pushers who are going to be the ones who are
championing free speech
and saying that their voices need to be heard and stuff, and maybe it's because they are still kind of like on the fringes
Well, free speech quite literally doesn't seem to, like, in his experience, doesn't apply to him. That, like, the things he says...
His speech seems pretty fucking free.
Well, I agree, but he won't think that.
I mean, he's being sent to jail for something he said, basically.
So there is that kind of, like, hijacking of it that...
The contempt of court laws are restrictions on speech. Yes. That's absolutely what they are.
Yeah, 100%. So. But then we have this kind of... I think there is a binary of how people end up thinking about freedom of speech that doesn't take into account all of the things that are really good and have actually pushed society to the point where it is today when it comes to kind of like equal rights and rights of like people of colour, marginalised groups and stuff like that. Because when you think about kind of like people who wanted women to have the vote, for example, they were seen as nut jobs and that they shouldn't be able to have a platform. And now look where we are. There's a woman in number 10.
Not for long.
Not for long though.
And I think strictly speaking, free speech doesn't really, it doesn't lend itself to one particular set of ideas or policies. It just depends, you know, whoever is roughly in charge will try and clamp down on speech that disagrees with them. That's always what happens. And it so happens that right now there's a, you know, elite politicians tend to be of a progressive mindset socially speaking, and therefore the speech that's being clamped down on is the Tommy Robinson style speech, it's hate speech and that sort of thing.
Can the Prime Minister pardon people like the American president?
That's an American thing, really.
Because I was going to say, I can see Boris Johnson letting him out.
Can the Queen pardon someone?
I don't think the Queen's going to be letting him pardon. I don't think the Queen's letting Stephen Yaxley Lennon out of prison, though.
He's double barreled.
She's probably the most nationalist.
Jimmy once described us as seditious over Twitter, and it's comments like that.
You are quite seditious, to be fair.
I agree. I agree.
Maybe,
I'm just saying that's where the perception comes from.
I think I suggested there'd be tougher rules against seditious podcasts.
Yes, you did. Yeah, and then I called you Orwell, and we had fun.
Is there anything else we want to say about Tommy Robinson?
No, yeah.
I'm quite happy not to hear about him ever again, yeah. But I don't suppose that's
Jimmy, we literally have a podcast where we basically have to.
He's all over the internet again as well, because he's, I mean, obviously he was all over the internet anyway, but then he came out in his I was arrested for journalism t-shirt, and now it's the biggest meme on the internet at the moment. If you look on those meme, I don't know what they're called, those investing meme thing. There's those websites where it tells you the potential of memes and how powerful they're going to be soon.
That's how you guys are killing the game.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, just following those. But yeah, I think he's...
With them memes.
I'm sure he's most likely near the top of what's trending in memes. Just
Wait, who
that
is?
T-shirt. Tommy Robinson.
Oh,
in his
right,
t-shirt.
Yeah, sorry, I totally forgot what's going on. I thought we'd moved on from him. I was like, yes, we got out of Tommy.
We were about to, but then I was having a mini rant.
Pulled us back in.
Where can we follow you guys on the internet, so or find you, so that they
Google.
Can tune into the bants?
You head to Google, type in Totally Unprepared Politics, and we've got all of the things: Instagram, SoundCloud,
we're
iTunes,
in every place,
YouTube,
so
all the places.
Whichever one is the one that you want to engage with us in is the one we'll be on for you.
Ubiquitous.
Yes, so that's Totally Unprepared Politics.
You can't get rid of us.
That is what Totally
Unprepared.
Politics.
Sorry, we didn't prepare that.
And you can find at us at Right Dishonor, probably. Jimmy's at JDE Nichols, and I'm at Jazza John on all social media platforms.
You need to change that to Jazza.
Are you on
Jimmy
also?
John.
Jazza Jimmy John Jimmy
and
Jazza.
And then what's it actually, Stephen?
We don't follow you on enough social media platforms, it seems, Jazza. I didn't know you're on all of them.
I'm on all of them as Jazza John, but you can't just type in Jazza into YouTube and find me, because there's some Australian who's called Josiah.
And it comes up.
I'm not bitter.
He's much more successful than
he is much more successful.
You sound very bitter.
I am. All right, toodaloo, everybody. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Peace.
Bye.